You're listening to episode number 62 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
Welcome back to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I've got a great show for you today, where we're going to be discussing overtraining. But first, a couple of announcements here. Number one, the website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacle, and of course, my online training plan store is available at tailwind-coaching.com. And the podcast show notes for this particular podcast can be found at tailwind-coaching.com/62. Now, I encourage you, head on over to the website, visit the online training plan store for complete training solutions for all your major season goals, grand fondos, races, rides, general fitness, and of course cyclocross, which is happening pretty much as we speak. And while you're there, don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support option to get yourself coached for a very, very small percentage of what it would normally cost you. Basically, the concept here, you buy the off-the-shelf plan, that's one of my downloadable training plans, and I'm going to coach you through it. All right, I'm going to help you adapt it to your goals. I'm going to help you adapt it around your schedule. I'm even going to help you adapt and plan your entire season around that training plan. That's for the low, low cost of $30 a month. Folks, my cheapest one-on-one coaching options are exactly $100, so you're saving $70. You're saving 70% on that. Now, that is $30 a month. So for the cost of 1 month of regular one-on-one coaching, you can actually have a coach for 3 months. Sounds like a great, great deal, right? People have had a lot of success with this, so I encourage you to go check it out. And while you're there to complement those training plans, I want you to sign up for the Tailwind Coaching Newsletter. You can find that link at tailwind-coaching.com/signup, S-I-G-N-U-P. And of course, signing up for that, don't forget I never sell email addresses. That would just be ridiculous. But what you do, you go ahead, you sign up for that. I give you a month of free training when you sign up for that. I give you a couple of other nifty little add-ons and extras throughout the following month as I guide you through your training. And once you do sign up for that, you will get free coaching advice, workouts, fitness information, special offers, coupon codes, things like that delivered to your inbox periodically. And I encourage you, of course, to share that with your friends, family, and riding buddies so that they can benefit from it too. Now, if you do head on over to the website, check out the blog or the show notes or the downloadable training plans, I really encourage you to visit my sponsors. The Tailwind Coaching Podcast has always been free, and I want to keep it free for the rest of eternity, however long I decide to do this. I love watching people ride their bike. I love people enjoying riding their bike. So this is a free service that I love offering. The sponsors actually contribute a few pennies to the hosting and bandwidth costs for Tailwind Coaching when you click through the links and you order from them. And in no particular order, Road ID will speak for you when you're unable to. The Sufferfest, some of the best indoor cycling videos out there for those of you who get bored on the trainer. US Wellness Meats for hormone-free grass-fed proteins. Bulletproof Executive for all your biohacking needs. My Amazon store links, which has all of my recommended training tools, Garmin devices, some supplements, and things like that. And of course, Exos Nutrition, purveyor of high quality nutritional supplements. For those of you who are looking to get a hold of me, again, on the website, tailwind-coaching.com, you can click on any of the icons in the upper right corner. You can follow me at Strava, RSS, Stitcher, email, Facebook at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, Twitter, at Coach Rob DC. You can follow me on Instagram, etc., etc. And of course, if you need to contact me, shoot me an email at coachrobdc@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you within about a day. And the last thing I will ask of you, if you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or if you're listening on the website, head on over to iTunes, rate this podcast 5 stars on iTunes. Helps me move up the ranks, reach a few more people. It helps a few more people, and it helps get that advice out there. Remember, free podcast, I like to watch people ride their bike and get better doing it. Otherwise, what's the point of doing this? All right. So, announcements out of the way, let's get into the topic of today's discussion, which is going to be overtraining. What is overtraining? How do you fix it? And how do you prevent it in the first place? Okay, what exactly is overtraining? Well, before I even get to overtraining, I need to go over something called Selye's General Adaptation Syndrome. Now, this is something that pretty much applies to almost everybody. who is out there, and this will apply not only to exercise, it will apply to your daily life as well. Since there's no such thing in life that does not put stress on your body, this is going to happen. The following cascade of events is going to happen anytime you have any kind of stress on your body, whether you're going to work and you're going to a meeting where you're getting chewed out for not making a deadline, whether you're getting a bill in the mail, whether you're paying your taxes, whether your dog just decided to poop on the neighbor's lawn and he caught you doing it and now he's all pissed off at you, all right? Any stressor in your life, whether it's exercise related or not, your body goes through this general adaptation syndrome. And basically, the general adaptation syndrome is essentially a stress response, okay? So let's go take it stage at a time. The number one stage is basically a shock stage, or an alarm stage is what Selye called it. And by the way, this is named after Hans Selye. I will put a, I'll try to remember to put a link in the video description. I'll put a link in the podcast show notes. That I actually can do. Put a link in the podcast show notes to a Wikipedia article or some other article on the general adaptation syndrome. And just going through this actual stages of the alarm, going through the actual stages of the general adaptation syndrome, you basically have stage one, the alarm stage. And that is basically a reaction. All right, so something piques your body, something spikes your body, something stresses your body. All right, the immediate reaction is to any kind of stressor, and that's the alarm phase. During that alarm phase, your body will exhibit a fight or flight type of response. All right, and that basically prepares your body for action or activity, specifically physical activity. Unfortunately, what happens when your body prepares for physical activity is it shuts down any other systems or processes that are involved in resting, digesting, reproducing, anything of that nature. So this is a purely sympathetic stage that is basically trying to protect you and protect your body so you do not get eaten, killed, or otherwise erased from existence. All right, this is a this whole thing is basically an adaptation for us to continue surviving. All right, so the first stage, the alarm stage, or the reaction stage, is something spooks you, something stresses your body, and what happens is it creates a sympathetic response. It creates a fight or flight response. You may have heard of that. Stage two would be the resistance stage. Consider the resistance stage. I'm having trouble talking today. I don't know why. But at this stage, the stress causes your body to adapt. All right. This could be considered overreaching as well. But essentially what happens here is changes take place in your body at a number of different levels, both from measurable to immeasurable, from biochemical all the way up through, end results like increased heart rate, things like that. Basically, here's a good example. If what is stressing you out is starvation, if you haven't been eating, maybe this particular athlete or person is anorexic, you may actually experience a resistance adaptation of reduced desire for physical activity because your body's trying to conserve energy, and your body may increase the absorption of nutrients from its from the food that it is getting. All right, so there's a number of different adaptations that happen at this point. In terms of exercise, this is generally more of an overreaching situation. An overreaching situation would be the one where you actually create the adaptations that make your body a little bit more efficient and a little bit stronger. And again, it depends on what the stressor is based on, what the outcome is going to be. So if you have a negative stressor, for example, an anorexic athlete doesn't eat. That's a pretty negative stressor. That's going to cause some negative feedback into your body, and you're going to have some negative adaptations to that. Whereas somebody who, for example, goes to the gym and lifts and has a healthy diet, they're going to experience positive adaptations of muscle growth, increased neuromuscular strength, things like that. So these actual adaptation is dependent upon the stressor itself in stage two. Moving along to stage three, we have something called exhaustion stage. Now, this is a point where stress has gone on for a little bit too long, and your body's resistance to that stress and adaptation to that stress may be actually generally reduced or completely falling apart. There may be a point where your body simply cannot adapt any further. And at that point, typically you see things like you get sick. You're overtrained. You're burned out. In fact, there's the word, am I overtrained? You're burned out. You're tired. You have no interest in training. You have no interest in doing anything. This is very typical with the guy who lives in a high-stress job, high-stress marriage, and suddenly drops dead of a heart attack for, you know, from the age of 45. You know, this is the kind of thing that they have spent their entire life in a really stage of resistance, and eventually, then once the body is hit an exhaustion stage, it can't handle it anymore. High blood pressure sets in and things like that, and suddenly a guy kills over dead with a heart attack at 45. So it goes to show that this general adaptation syndrome is not simply, you know, something that applies to training stress, but it does also apply to pretty much any kind of stress that your body is going to undergo, whether it's training or otherwise. Now, to get a little bit more specific in terms of what happens during during the general adaptation syndrome phases, let's go back to phase one and let's go through it a little bit more in detail. Again, the alarm stage number one is a healthy response to a new stress. So you decide to go out and start a training plan. Okay. Initially, your body goes, hey, dude, what are you doing here? What are you doing to me? What happens? Well, you see a couple of things. You see an increase in sympathetic tone in the body, and sympathetic tone is a neurological condition where the sympathetic nervous system is being stimulated, and the sympathetic nervous system, again, is that fight or flight system. With that, you'll see an increase in the output of central stress hormones. If you're measuring these via blood work or anything else, corticotropin-releasing hormone, adrenocorticotropic hormone, things of that nature. You'll find an increased adrenal output of epinephrine, norepinephrine, and cortisol, all stress-type hormones. In fact, I've spoken about cortisol many times in the past as being one of those chronic stress hormones, a very catabolic hormone that breaks down substrates for your body to use for energy. All right, epinephrine and norepinephrine, of course, are essentially adrenalines that help to boost your attention and get you ready to basically run away from the tiger that's chasing you. And of course, there are various changes on the nervous system, other parts of the hormonal system, and et cetera, et cetera. And one of the most important things that you'll note if you're following along with this, and at some point I'm going to do a blog post about this, is you're going to find a decrease in heart rate variability. Now, heart rate variability, really quickly explained here, is the variability of time, or the variance in time, in between each heartbeat. So nobody has an exact even time in between each heartbeat. There's this micro variation in terms of how when your heart beats. And the higher that variability, based on regular sinus rhythm, which is a sinus rhythm is a breathing in and breathing out, put very simply. And with that sinus rhythm comes a change in your heart rate variability. As you breathe in, your body, your heart rate will tend to increase slightly so that it can pump more blood while you have oxygen coming into the lungs. As you breathe out, your body will tend to slow your heart rate slightly. And it's very, very minuscule. There are a couple of apps to do to measure this. There are a couple of dedicated tools to measure this, but it's not terribly important at this point, but it's something to keep in mind. Back to the general adaptation syndrome stages. Let's go back to stage two. Stage two, that resistance stage, or the overreaching stage, tends to, again, occur in response to an imbalance between training stress and recovery, tends to be prolonged stress. You get, again, an increase in sympathetic tone during exercise only. You get an increase in parasympathetic tone, which would be that rest and digest and recover system during your recovery. Your heart rate variability, as I mentioned above, increases due to an increased anti-inflammatory response from the parasympathetic nervous system trying to heal your body up from the damage you're giving it. There is a very significant decrease in recovery. Basically, what happens is all of the proteins that your body is burning up to really rebuild your muscles from all the damage you're doing to them, that cannot rebuild fast enough. So essentially, it doesn't bother to turn over everything as much as it should. Stress hormone levels are up, cortisol levels are increased. Your central nervous system actually really responds to a decrease in the actual adrenal response. Basically, what that means is when hormones like adrenaline, cortisol become less effective, your central nervous system actually increases the signals to produce more of those. So essentially what you end up with is a really vicious cycle, a really nasty cycle where it's not working, so we put more of it in, but the more of it put in, the less it works, so we put more of it in to work better. You follow? You also get a couple of other responses in there. Basically, what it ends up being is your body is desensitized to stress and to recovery. And of course, that third stage, that chronic stress, again, this is where we're going to find our overtraining in the exhaustion stage. This is when your body just cannot adapt to the stress you're putting on it, and this is when you get sick, okay? Basically, this is the same thing as adrenal exhaustion, if you've heard of that term. Basically, the glands become resistant to any of the central stress hormone hormones that cause you to release cortisol and things like that. Sympathetic response is actually impaired, so you can't get your heart rate up. You have ridiculously bad variations in cortisol throughout the day. In fact, you're flatlined, so you're always tired. You have a real difficulty with sleeping. There's some decreased output of testosterone and other anabolic type markers. You'll start to suffer some psychological symptoms of burnout and overtraining. Of course, you won't be able to recover muscle damage because your body is too taxed to do anything. And of course, the big one here, you have depressed immune function. And like I said, this is when guys get sick. It happens every year during the classics. You get a bunch of guys that suddenly have a stomach bug or they have a respiratory infection or something of that nature. And that is essentially what happens when they have stress themselves too much and they simply cannot recover. Heart rate variability in this case basically remains elevated due to really chronically increased parasympathetic response, and that is something to keep in mind. Now, something that we didn't talk about in the general adaptation syndrome is what happens when you stop your activity. This is basically deloading, and this is the recovery week. So if you're following a lot of my training plans, you're going to find a recovery week every fourth or fifth week. If you're not doing recovery weeks, God help you, it's going to be a long training year for you guys. Just stating the obvious, of course. But anyway, when you deload, all right, that basically resets everything. Cortisol levels tend to decrease back to your resting levels. Sometimes they improve. Diurnal variation of cortisol will improve. So throughout the day, you'll have more significant variation in what your cortisol does. And of course, cortisol keeping you alert, things like that. The central nervous system actually responds better to acute stress responses. So for some reason, you're well-trained and you're called on to chase somebody down the street who stole somebody's purse. Your body will actually respond better to that acute stress. And of course, inflammation decreases. You can measure that. You can measure markers like that. And heart rate variability actually decreases back to a very baseline level. And it's worth noting that baseline levels tend to increase if aerobic activity increases, because aerobic activity tends to really stress the cardiopulmonary system above all else. So keep that in mind as well. So now that we've gone through a real quick overview, and that's a real quick overview of the general adaptation syndrome, trust me, folks, we spent an entire semester in college on this, so that's a real quick overview, even if it is about 10 minutes or so. Now that we've gone through that, let's talk about what is overtraining and how do you know if you're overtrained. All right. Many people believe that overtraining is either a myth or it's something that cannot happen to them. And that can't really be further from the truth. Overtraining is something that can happen to pretty much anybody and is certainly not a myth, as we talked about in that previous little portion about the general adaptation syndrome. The longer your body is under stress without any kind of relief, the more likely it is to end up overtrained in the case of an athlete, or simply exhausted in the case of normal everyday life. And now remember, again, and this bears repeating over and over and over again, because it is incredibly important to your training. Your training is additional stress on top of your body's daily stressors. So going to work, feeding the dog, having a family, taking care of a home, driving to and from the office, you know, taking your kids to soccer, all of those stresses actually apply on top of your training. In fact, they are not even on top of your training, because you're not spending 40 hours a week training. They are the basis of the stress. Your training is actually additional stress on top of that. All right. So that being said, it's very easy to see how overtraining could possibly happen. Because if you have a significant amount of stress in your life already, now you're packing on 12 to 15 to 18 hours a week of training so that you can race Cat 2 or Cat 3. You know, road races, somehow your body has to deal with that. And if it can't, you end up overtrained. Now, I've used the word overtrained about a dozen times here, and I still haven't given you any indication of what it is. Well, we talked about what exactly overtraining is. Overtraining is a point where your body simply cannot adapt to the training stresses that you've put upon it, and it continually breaks down because it just simply cannot recover. What are the symptoms of overtraining? Because I know you're sitting there and you're going, okay, well, you gave me all this information about it, but you haven't told me how to determine if I actually have this problem. Okay, fine. Well, we'll do that. Just hold your horses. We get you squared away here. Overtraining. If you are feeling like your whole body's just washed out and beaten up, you're feeling excessively tired all the time. And I'm not talking about, you know, you got 3 hours of sleep last night because you were out drinking at the bar and suddenly you get up and go to work and you're like, man, I'm pretty tired today. Different kind of thing. Basically, you can get 8 hours of sleep and you wake up going, oh my God, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to do anything. You find yourself napping throughout the day and you're dragging throughout the day, relying on coffee or no doze, God forbid, to keep you alert and awake. That's the kind of tired I'm talking about. The kind of tired that hits you all the way to your core, to your bones, when you feel like, ugh, I just cannot get up today. That's the kind of tired we're talking about. If you tend to be grumpy or cranky, my coworkers love when I use the word cranky. You tend to be grumpy, cranky. You experience sudden mood swings. Suddenly you're happy about something and the next minute you just want to punch somebody in the face. That can be a sign of overtraining, especially if you're in the middle of a very heavy training block. If you suddenly become irrational, maybe you start yelling at somebody about, you know, giving you a quarter in change instead of 50 cents, and you sit there and realize, man, what am I doing? That could be from your overtraining. That could be you're overtrained. If you have a lack of energy, along with being tired, if you have a lack of energy for any kind of other activities, that could mean going out with your spouse, going out with your friends, doing things that you previously loved doing. That could be a sign of overtraining. If you suffer from depression, now this is a very difficult one to get a hold of and get your head wrapped around, because depression in athletes can come from many, many, many sources, from a poor result in a race, from, you know, any number of other things. Typically, the poor results are the number one things that I see with athletes that are, quote, depressed. But if you are depressed for no reason whatsoever, everything's great in your life, you know, great family, great kids, and you're hitting the podiums in races, but you're still depressed, you could be touching the overtrained mark. So keep an eye on that. If you have a decreased appetite, typically when you're training, you want to eat anything and everything you can wrap your mouth around, and even things you can't wrap your mouth around. Living or dead, you basically just want to just shove it in your mouth and eat it. If that kind of feeling sort of goes away, that can certainly be an indicator that your body is a little bit overstressed and possibly overtrained. If you're getting headaches, you have an increased incidence of injury, aches or pains or things like that, that's another sign or symptom of overtraining. And the big one here, there's actually three big ones for me. And these are the ones that when I see these three, especially together, it's basically time to pull the plug on an athlete for a little while. Number one, they relate that they have a lot of trouble sleeping. And I'm not talking about trouble sleeping like, yeah, I woke up to go to the bathroom. I'm talking about you laid down at 10 o'clock and you tossed and turned and you were awake for 2 hours and then you woke up an hour later and then you woke up twice in the next 3 hours and then you were up at 3:30 in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning wide awake and you could not go back to sleep. And I'm talking that kind of pattern continues for weeks at a time, not just a day, not just 2 days, not diet related, not because you drank too much or anything like that, but it does continue for a significant period of time. That's another sign of overtraining here. A loss of enthusiasm for the chosen sport that you're participating in, whether this is cycling, whether it's triathlons, whether you're running, whether you're weightlifting, when you basically say, you know what? I don't care about it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm not interested anymore. And I'm not talking about you're not interested, you don't want to do it, you're not feeling it because you got hurt doing it, or your season is over because your training blocks are done, or something like that. When you're basically in the middle of a build phase or a peak phase and you're racing and you're basically saying, I don't really want to do this, that could be an indication that something is going on, that maybe a little bit of overtraining going on here. And that's something you really need to pay attention to. And of course, the number one that most people will come to me first is, my performance is suffering, my performance is dropping. I'm putting in 20 hours a week of training, but I'm not getting anywhere. In fact, I'm getting slower. I can't sprint as well. I can't climb as well. What's going on? Well, you're overdoing it. Pretty much period, simple, end of story. You're probably overdoing it. And you're probably a little bit overtrained. All right? So, now you've got some of the signs and symptoms of overtraining. Now, best thing to do now, take that checklist and ask yourself, am I experiencing any of these things? Am I falling victim to any of these things? Am I feeling like, geez, yeah, I am really tired all the time? Am I feeling like, you know, I've been really short with my wife or my husband right now, you know, and have I just been kind of depressed for no apparent reason? Have I had trouble sleeping? Have I tried to sleep but had a lot of trouble sleeping? These are things that you really have to pay attention to, and this is why it helps to keep a training log so that you actually can keep track of these things. Now, once you keep a training log and you're logging your sleep, you're logging your attitudes, you're logging your activities, everything else, suddenly you can see gaps where, yeah, you know, this is a problem. I wasn't doing this before. So go through that checklist, check your training log, and find out. Maybe you are a little overtrained. Maybe that's something you need to consider. And if you are a little bit overtrained, now we're going to talk about some of the physiological markers of overtraining so that you can actually find out truly how badly overtrained you are. All right, physiological markers of overtraining are a little bit different, and these are things that essentially you're going to have to go to a doctor to get. Well, I shouldn't say that. One of these things you're going to have to go to a doctor to get. And the number one way of determining if you are overtrained from a physiological standpoint would be a testosterone cortisol ratio test. Now, what typically happens with testosterone cortisol ratio, in fact, I will put up a link to an article. Actually, I'll pull it up right now while I'm looking at it here. I'm going to put up a link to an article here from the American Journal of Medical Science. And this is from, oh good lord, 2012. And it's the Physiological Perspective of Endurance Overtraining. It's a comprehensive update by a couple of people that I really cannot pronounce at all. essentially from the University of Calcutta, University College of Science and Technology from Calcutta, and also from a group in someplace in Greece, which I cannot pronounce, but I'll include a link to this in the podcast show notes. Essentially, what this is talking about is testosterone to cortisol ratio being a really, really great definition, a really, really great defining characteristic of overtraining. And typically what really happens in this case, physiologically, you're going to find things, you know, where anabolic hormones are basically shut down, and catabolic hormones such as cortisol are increased. And the increase in cortisol is designed as, again, a defense mechanism to keep your body at the ready, in a sympathetic state, ready to run, fight, or whatever it has to do to survive. And of course, that comes at a cost of decreasing anabolic muscle building recovery type hormones. And typically, this is a blood test. It's a pretty simple test to do. It's not cheap by any matter of means, but it is a pretty simple test to get done. And you can go to your GP and you can generally request this. And for the most part, they'll be glad to, you know, indulge you in this little bit of information. So that is a fantastic way of determining, are you truly overtrained? And testosterone to cortisol ratios anywhere, I mean, typically something that I would see in the office, I've seen well below 1.0 for testosterone and cortisol ratios. And that is, you know, that's really, really pretty terrible. Those are guys that are just kind of destroyed. So you don't want to get involved in that kind of stuff. So, but it's a great test. It's a really great test. It's a really thorough test, which will really help you determine the severity of your overtraining. Another interesting bit, again, as we talked about way back earlier in the beginning of the podcast, was heart rate variability. And heart rate variability is a great way of determining if you have some overtraining adaptations going on. Typically, what you'll find with heart rate variability is you'll see the very, very elevated increase in heart rate variability. You will see really, really high low frequency values, very, very, very low high frequency values. And typically what you will also find is that heart rate variability tends to be consistently elevated. It doesn't tend to drop. It doesn't tend to vary based on your training states or resting states. So that's also something to pay attention to. Physiological signs of overtraining, you know, again, things like altered resting heart rate, blood pressure, breathing. Suddenly you find yourself breathing faster. You find that your heart rate is either shooting through the roof on really easy intervals, or you can't get the thing up, period, no matter what you try. Chronic fatigue. Again, sleeping issues are a huge, huge physiological marker. So if you find that you're watching your sleep via a Fitbit, which many people are these days, and you find that you're suddenly more restless, that could be something that's really, really noted. Another thing that you can find is, again, eating issues, digestive problems, just not wanting to eat, period. If you want to go back to blood testing, we can look at decreases in free testosterone in the blood. That's a really, really great marker for overtraining purposes. Elevated C-reactive protein or sedimentation rate is another really good one. That's actually a very basic test that you can have done. Doesn't really cost you much to have that one done. And it's a really great baseline marker to find out, geez, how inflamed is my body? Is my body really handling this kind of stress very well? So keep those in mind as well. And again, speak to your doctor, speak to your regular MD about overtraining stuff and seeing if you can get a couple of blood tests each year just to get a baseline on how your body's reacting. All right. Never hurts to have a baseline for any of your physiological markers, especially if you're going to be any kind of high-end athlete. So keep that in mind as well. Now, once we figured out that we're overtrained, and of course, most of you are going to figure out overtraining based on a set of symptoms and signs that you're going to see. Most of you aren't going to have access to physiological markers, testosterone, cortisol ratios, SED rates, C-reactive proteins, things like that. Again, I do encourage you to go to your doctor, discuss it with them, and talk to them about getting some blood work done, especially a couple times a year. It's a great tool, as I mentioned. But for the most part, you won't have this. You're going to be diagnosing your overtraining based on the amount of training you're doing, number one, the amount of stress in your life, number two, and how you're feeling. So if that's how you're diagnosing overtraining, how do we go about actually stopping it? How do we actually go about reducing it? How do we go about preventing it? Well, it's not as hard as you think. So now that we need to think about stopping ourselves from overtraining, recovering, digging ourselves out of the hole, we need to figure out how to do that. Now, this goes without saying. The obvious solution here, if you are overtrained, is to stop training. Give yourself a recovery day, or recovery week, or maybe even 2 weeks. Recovery day is the number one thing. Start with a day off, completely off, and see how you feel. If suddenly you spring back, maybe you're only overreaching. Maybe you're not truly overtrained. But typically, if you're seeing more than a couple of these overtraining markers that we really discussed, you're going to need to take a little more time than that off. And typically what I do when I have athletes that come to me and they say, listen, this is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling really tired. You know, I'm starting to get headachy. I'm starting to get grumpy. I have really poor performances here. And, you know, honestly, I'm not sleeping well. And I just really don't want to go out and ride. You know what the number one thing I tell them to do is to take a week off. And when I say take a week off, I mean take a week off. I mean hang your bike up in the garage. Don't even look at it. And don't even think about trying to get out and ride it. Don't even think about going for a run. Don't go kayaking. Don't do anything that's going to actually stress out your body. Rest. Relax. The classic here, in fact, I've had a couple of guys that did this, is when I've said, you know, you could be really tickling the overtraining, you know, monster a little bit here, and you really don't want to poke that bear too hard, so you really need to take a week off. Well, apparently, my telling them to take a week off translates into, let's take the kids and go on vacation for a week and sit on the beach and drink beer and a bunch of other things. So, hey, whatever works for you. If that's what gets you to chill out, relax, and get away from your bike, maybe that's what you need to do. But take a week off. All right. Really start to relax and let your body get a chance just to recover from the stresses and the activities you're putting it through. Additional things, even while you're taking that week off, you can add to your recovery routine. And you can even add these to your recovery routine during your training. All right. This is not exclusive to digging yourself out of the overtraining hole, but it does certainly help. And of course, I'm going to be a huge proponent of getting a massage, using some kind of compression gear, keeping your legs elevated, things like that, to try and flush all of the metabolic waste out of your legs, out of your muscles, and see if you can actually just sort of get some fresh blood into them, give them a little bit more chance to recover by giving them fresh nutrients, giving them plenty of oxygen, things like that, without stressing them out. All right. Somebody once told me, in fact, it was a professor, that, you know, you tell somebody, well, you got to get some blood into your legs. That means, oh, I'm going to go for a run. No, you're not going to go for a run. That's what put you in this place in the first, put you in this position in the first place. You don't want to do that. All right. Don't do that. Sit on the couch, sit with your feet up, get a massage, get some compression gear on you, something of that nature, just so that you can actually start to really, really push the crap out of your legs. All right. Additionally, use water therapy, all right? For those of you who have access to a pool and you're not using it, I just have one question. Why? Why are you not using it? You have access to a pool. A pool is a wonderful tool to help you recover. Number one, cool water around your legs and around your body acts as an anti-inflammatory to some extent. Additionally, you can move without putting any kind of pressure on your legs, putting any kind of stress on your legs. There's no gravity pulling you down. You're generally neutrally buoyant to positively buoyant. If you're negatively buoyant, you have a problem, because that generally means you're probably dead. So you're either neutral to neutral to positively buoyant. I got to thank my scuba instructor from way back when for telling me that. neutral to positively buoyant. So it takes a lot of the stress off your legs of gravity. And you really don't have to move much in a pool. You can pretty much swim using your arms and legs without a lot of stress, which is really, again, a nice recovery feature. You can get moving without putting a lot of tension, a lot of stress in the muscles and on your body. The obvious ones here. And of course, if you really want to recover from overtraining, take a look at that list that I gave you before and do the exact opposite. All right. If you're eating poorly, change your diet. Eat better. Stop eating crap. Stop going to McDonald's or stop going to Burger King or Taco Bell or whatever your post-ride nosh is. All right. Stop putting crap into your body as fuel and start putting something good in there. That'll help your body. Your body doesn't have to fight off inflammatory components and inflammatory markers and mediators from the food you're eating, so it can actually focus on letting your muscles recover. It makes sense. It's only common sense. But common sense isn't that common, right? Get to bed early. All right, how many times have I spoken to athletes, college, this is notorious of high school and college athletes as well, is, well, you know, I'm young, I can get away with it. I'm going to bed at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. I'm getting up for practice at 7. Your body cannot survive on 4, 5, 6 hours of sleep a night. Especially younger athletes need more. But your average adult, you need to be sleeping for about 7 hours a night to adequately recover from the day's stresses and your training stress that you put on top of it. All right, that is an absolute key and needs to be said, that if you cannot sleep enough, you cannot recover from the daily stress of your lifestyle as well as your training stress. One or the other is going to break. I guarantee it. Additionally, stay hydrated. Make sure you're drinking about 60 ounces of water a day. I'm not talking about walking around like a wrestler with a gallon jug of water and pounding it down all day, but you know what? Constantly sipping from a water bottle is not a bad thing. Not only that, does it help you keep you hydrated, it helps to keep you refreshed as well. And of course, avoid alcohol. I know plenty of guys that go out for a post-ride beer, and that's perfectly okay. It's not the end of the world. But if you're a guy that loves to go out and hammer them down and tie a few on every single night, that's going to affect your training. That's really going to affect your stress. That's going to affect your body's ability to fight off disease. And it's going to affect your body's ability to recover from your training and your daily stress. So think about not tying on a few tonight. Maybe put it off until the weekend. Might be a good idea, right? do something different. If you absolutely need to exercise, if you're one of those people that just simply cannot exist without some kind of workout, do something different for your exercise. So most of you who are listening here are cyclists of some kind or another. Maybe your exercise is actually, going for a walk with your dog, or going for a jog around the block, or maybe go to the gym and lift upper body weights. Imagine that, a cyclist with an upper body. It's crazy talk. Nobody does that. But do something else. In fact, weightlifting is a phenomenal recovery tool. Wait, didn't he just say that you're not supposed to do anything? You're not supposed to do anything during your recovery, but now he's telling us to go lift weights. Now, I'm telling you to go to the gym and lift weights upper body. Use the muscles that your body is not using. By using the muscles that your body is not using, number one, you stimulate those anabolic pathways. You raise those testosterone levels. You help almost trick your body into that anabolic state, into that muscle-building state. And it's not just your arms that are going to grow, but the rest of your body as well, because the hormones, the anabolic hormones like testosterone, insulin-like growth factor, things like that, human growth hormone, will affect your entire body, not just the muscles you exercised. So that's why weight training of any kind is a great adjunct to cycling training. And it's a great way to help dig you out of that overtrained hole a little bit. And of course, finally, the easy way to do this, get yourself a coach. Whether it's me, whether it's somebody else, whether it's a Carmichael Training Systems, whether it's a Training Peaks, get yourself a coach. Because honestly, nobody is going to be better at planning a workout than a coach. Sure, you may have done it for years, and I've done this, and I've trained this way, and I've had this, and I've done this, and I've excelled here, and that's great. But your coach can teach you how to get more out of your workouts while keeping you from hitting the wall and crashing and burning. That's what a coach's job is, and that's what they're good at. So keep that in mind as well, that having a little bit extra help to help dig you out of that hole is always welcome, especially when the psychological part of it hits, which, of course, I talked about the psychological part of it in my previous discussion about plateauing. If you really need to take a look at that, I'll include a link to Plateau, to that Plateau podcast in my show notes here. Tailwind-coaching/62. So those are a couple of the quick ways to stop yourself from overtraining or dig yourself out of the overtraining hole. If you have any other tips or tricks for me or got questions for it, shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com, or find me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or tweet at me @CoachRobDC, and let me know what's worked for you and what has not worked for you. So that being said, I want to thank you all for hanging out with me today, and I hope you learned a little bit about something. I'm sure you have questions. Do not hesitate to send them to me, because there's no such thing as a stupid question, and sometimes I get the most thought-provoking stuff from some of my listeners. So again, thanks for hanging out with me, and if you have any questions, shoot them to me. I want you to ride fast. I want you to ride strong. I want you to ride happy. Keep the shiny side up. Keep the rubber side down, and I'll be talking to you again real soon.